You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Subscribe to Squawk Pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the American Greed Podcast, presented by CNBC. I'm Stacy Keach. In this episode of American Greed, it's a dangerous job. But Carlos Rafael, a.k.a. the Codfather, makes a killing in commercial fishing. His secret? Lying and cheating.
This is his way of life, to break the law repeatedly.
Rafael is salty.
S.A.S., look at me.
He's really kind of a character. He's very funny. He's really profane.
The all of you.
And he can't stop bragging, which makes the Codfather easy to catch on tape.
The government wants to put me in jail for price fixing because I control the while the market is bad.
But how will the feds respond when they learn the Codfather's secret sauce includes a sheriff's deputies smuggling cash?
You have to understand, that's where 9/11 started, Boston Logan Airport. And now we're hearing about a law enforcement officer circumventing security at that same airport.
New Bedford, Massachusetts is a small port city that typically attracts tourists and fishermen. But in June 2015, two self-described Russian mobsters show up in town. They say they are looking for a place to stash more than $100 million in cash. Their best bet is Carlos Rafael, the crude boss of the New Bedford waterfront, who has a fleet of 32 fishing boats worth millions. The Russians tell Rafael they want to buy his business, but first, they need to see his books. In response, Rafael makes a joke.
You could be the IRS, and this could be a plus the.
And then he thinks again.
No, the only thing I owe myself because you both use the Russians. I don't think they would have to.
The Russians laugh, but the joke is on Rafael. They are the IRS. And this undercover operation is off to a good start. They are now confident they will learn the secrets of the man who has earned the nickname the Codfather. Rafael's story begins in the Azores Islands off the coast of Portugal, where he is born. In 1968, he convinces his family to move to America. Andy Lelling is the U.S. Attorney for the District of Massachusetts.
He came here from Portugal approximately at the age of 15. He doesn't have much education. He doesn't really know the language. He gets a job on the docks in New Bedford, and he just stays there.
In coming to New Bedford, Rafael's family is following generations of Portuguese fishermen who have come to this famous port. It was once the center of the whaling industry. But when whaling dies, the money here moves to what is called ground fish. Haddock, flounder, and the fish that America was founded on, cod. Peter Shelley is a lawyer with the Conservation Law Foundation.
Cod was the reason a lot of the colonists came here because they were so abundant. It was literally the first industry in the country.
By the 1970s, when Rafael is settling into New Bedford, enormous factory ships from around the world are close by, making off with millions of pounds of fish each day.
They would process fish 24 hours, 7 days a week. Fishermen who were around at that time have said it looked like Manhattan out there. There were so many lights of the boats parked even just 60 or 70 miles offshore.
The fleets of foreign boats are legally in international waters. But the presence of Soviet fishing boats lurking just offshore does not sit well with Americans. And so in 1976, Congress kicks out the foreigners and establishes a zone of 200 offshore miles as exclusive to the United States. And then the government offers subsidized loans to U.S. fishermen.
Now they had to build up the American fisheries because we were nothing, and they just started handing out free money.
At the time, Jim Kendall is well into his career as a scallop fisherman.
Anybody wanted to build a boat and find a small down payment could go get it.
And that is when Carlos Rafael launches his career in the fishing industry. John Mitchell is the mayor of New Bedford.
For a young Azorean like Carlos, New Bedford was a place of opportunity, and he certainly took advantage of that.
While working as a fish cutter, Rafael gets a loan in 1980 and opens Carlos Seafood, a fish processing plant. Soon after, he buys his first boats, perfectly positioning himself to rake in big money.
He has his own captains on his own boats catching the fish. When those fish come into port, those boats are selling the fish to his own business.
And his timing could not be better.
His introduction to being a fishing operation in New England was this chaos of sort of a free-for-all. And the message, quite literally, was there's a lot of fish out there to catch. Go catch them.
And while Rafael may enjoy fishing for fun, for business, he sends his captains out to catch the fish. He stays on the shore.
No, he was never a true fisherman. Carlos was a lot of things, but that's one thing he can't claim.
And for many, that is a significant distinction. Because professional fishermen are people who routinely head out into treacherous waters in what is still one of the most dangerous professions in the country. John Boulard, now retired, was the Greater Atlantic Regional Administrator for NOAA.
People who've been out at sea, they learn humility. You look at a big wave or a big storm, you understand humility. And most every fisherman I know has that humility. There's not an ounce of humility in Carlos Rafael.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Subscribe to Squawk Pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Almost everyone who meets him learns that. As he tells the IRS undercover agents, he is among the smartest guys on the docks.
I know things that a lot of people don't know what they're in this business. Some of them, they think they know a lot of they know.
And one of the most important things Rafael knows is that to succeed, he needs lots of boats. Bigger is always better.
If you are a small farmer and you have one cow to get milk for the baby, the cow dies, you don't have milk for the baby. If you are a big farmer, you got 100 cows and the cow dies, you get the bulldozer, you dig a hole to the cow, but you got 99, you're still operating.
He's really kind of a character. He's sort of a loud, boisterous guy. He's very funny. He's really profane. He is memorable.
As Carlos Rafael's business grows, it appears that his story is a classic tale of an immigrant achieving the American dream.
Here's a young man who moved here from his homeland at a very young age with a little formal education and worked some very hard jobs on the docks and eventually saved money to build up a business. And that's laudable in the most fundamental ways that we Americans value.
But Rafael's story is more complicated. Early on, people who do business with him learn to be careful.
Well, if I shook hands with him, I guess I'd count my fingers after I got through shaking hands with him based on his reputation.
It is no secret that Rafael will agree to pay a price for a load of fish at the morning auction, but it is often not a final price.
The one time that Carlos bought my trip, I actually ended up not selling the Carlos because he tried to cut the price that he had agreed to pay, and I refused to let him do so.
Rafael says he is just protecting his business.
You're gonna say he's a rough in the business way. Well, did he ever buy the offer? He never tried to get his to get.
But it's one thing to gouge fishermen and another to cheat the U.S. government. For years, Rafael thinks the U.S. can wait for his tax payments. But the IRS disagrees.
He's prosecuted for tax evasion by my office in 1986. And he was convicted in that case.
Rafael serves 4 months in prison.
Most people would respond to an experience like that and say, you know what, I'm never going to let that happen to me again. But that wasn't Carlos's reaction.
No, it's not. Rafael's reaction is to continue to draw the attention of law enforcement. And it's not long before a second indictment comes down. This time, he is charged with price fixing.
The allegation was he was colluding with other commercial fishermen in New Bedford to set prices on certain kinds of fish.
The government wants to put me in jail for price fixing because I control the market in New Bedford.
But he pulls out his charm and, as he says, played the jury.
I got them to sympathize with me. The first thing, I just want them to like me. If they like me, I know I got them leak.
His strategy works. The jury takes his side, and he is acquitted. As he walks out of the courtroom, he has a message for the prosecutors.
They were all sitting over there and said, "As look at me. All of you no good, miserable, every single one of you pricks."
Ron Mullet is a special agent with the IRS.
That pretty well encapsulates his feelings about authority. He is not going to be told what to do by anybody at any time. He's his own person, and the rules just weren't made for him.
In 1994, fishermen up and down the New England coast receive stunning news. The fish that have been so plentiful for hundreds of years are disappearing. Species like haddock, flounder, and the mighty cod are in a dangerous state of decline.
We discovered, wow, we can overfish just as much as the Russians can. And, bust followed boom.
To give the fish a chance to rebound, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, comes up with a complicated set of regulations.
This is a national crisis. We are trying to...
At the time, John Bullard is the regional administrator of NOAA.
And the rules are complex, to say the least. I mean, our rules are literally that thick.
The fishermen are furious. They see not only their livelihood, but an entire way of life on the brink of extinction.
The new regulations means you're out of business.
One rules everything. Everything I've worked for 35 years, it's only a matter of time.
We're trying to survive here.
Think about what kind of a person wants to go out and brave the elements. They're fiercely independent people. They're not the kind of person who says, oh, hey, regulate me.
I got no money. Talking. I see the money.
And while fishermen with small operations are yelling, Carlos Rafael knows he will survive.
The strong will get stronger and the weak will disappear.
In Rafael's mind, the weak are the hundreds of fishermen who operate one or two boats. People like Rodman Sykes. Sykes is a third-generation fisherman operating near New Bedford in Point Judith, Rhode Island.
The only other thing I ever wanted to do was play second base for the Red Sox, and that didn't work out, so... so I became a fisherman.
Sykes begins his fishing career at the same time Rafael enters the industry, in the good old days.
Back then, you could do whatever you wanted to do. I mean, you throw the lines off and go fishing wherever you wanted, catch whatever you wanted.
But then he is faced with regulations that limit the horsepower on his boat and dictate that he use nets with wider mesh to decrease his catch.
It was just going from no restrictions to that was scary. You know, you haul a net in and you see these great big flounders swimming out right through the meshes and go swimming away. We can't possibly do this.
But the most severe restriction for some fishermen is a limitation on the number of days a boat can be at sea. Over time, as the fish don't rebound, the number of days gets smaller and smaller.
If someone says, I'm going to reduce the number of days you can fish, that hits the family budget. That has consequences. That may mean that the captain says, sorry, guys, we're not going to be able to provide health insurance in the nation's most dangerous job.
And that means that thousands of fishermen are forced out of the business. But Carlos Rafael is thriving. He has added scallop boats to his fleet, and they more than make up for the losses in groundfish.
He was doing quite fine running his scallopers, and no doubt about it, and making millions and millions of dollars.
And as for all those rules and regulations to protect groundfish, easy. It appears he simply ignores them.
I don't think that he actively sought to break them. They just were meaningless to him. I'm just gonna do what I want to do because I want to do it.
And over time, violations stack up. Exceeded haddock limit. Fished in closed area. Exceeded days at sea limit. Submitted false daily catch reports. But as he tells the IRS, he is not intimidated by government inspectors.
Yesterday, I got pissed off. He gave us a warning yesterday. He says, you know what I should do with this piece of paper? Stuck it up your ass, you stupid son of a bitch.
He's incorrigible. This is his way of life, to break the law repeatedly and challenge the federal government to catch him, and then catch him again, and then catch him again.
And the feds do continue to catch him. In 1999, there is a third indictment for Rafael. This time, he is caught lying on an application for a permit to catch squid, saying he has a history in the business.
The government followed up on that paperwork, and they found that these people had never purchased squid from Carlos. One of the businesses said, I wasn't even in business at the time that he allegedly sold me the squid.
Rafael has no defense this time. He pleads guilty to 5 counts of false statements and is sentenced to probation and 6 months house arrest. And when the punishment ends, it's back to business as usual. And his fines mount, $25,000 here, $30,000 there.
Worldwide Exchange is now a podcast. I'm Brian Sullivan. Join me as we hit the biggest money stories from around the world, breaking down the risks and rewards of global trade, the news you need to know with real-world actionable advice, and even a little fun and unique content you won't get anywhere else, like the most random but interesting thing you'll hear all day. Subscribe to the Worldwide Exchange podcast today.
Those monetary penalties probably would have put the average fisherman out of business.
But Rafael can afford the fines. At the time, he says he is worth at least $10 million. And that is when the Codfather is born.
He called himself the Codfather. So he modeled himself over a crime family. He wasn't ashamed of being a lawbreaker. He bragged about it.
And while Rafael continually thumbs his nose at law enforcement, most other fishermen make a different, painful choice.
None of us like the regulations, but they're not just for some people and not others, you know, and I try to go by them as well as I know them.
By 2009, Carlos Rafael is running one of the largest commercial groundfish businesses in the United States. He proudly attributes his success to his hard work.
The only thing I could build this was working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. It came from heaven.
At this point, he is a fixture on the New Bedford waterfront, often entertaining visitors at a waterfront festival with his tips on cutting and buying fresh fish.
You got red eyes. It's like when you have a bad night with a few drinks too many. You wake up in the morning and you invite Z. You do not want that fish.
It appears that Rafael is doing exceedingly well, but many of his competitors are struggling to eke out a living as the fish fail to rebound.
And a lot of guys didn't get through it. I have a lot of friends that have gone, lost their boats.
And as more and more fishermen call it quits, Rafael is there to take their boat off their hands. And that makes him a kind of hero in New Bedford, credited with keeping a dying industry afloat.
He kept vessels fishing, which employed four or five fishermen per boat, several people on the shore. There was a big upside to it.
But Rafael repeatedly makes it clear that he doesn't care about other fishermen. At a meeting where a proposal to provide emergency relief money to suffering fishermen is discussed, Rafael speaks up.
Carlos said, "The hell with them." He says, "They're just going to spend it on booze or drugs anyways." I mean, that was Carlos's opinion.
There was a young man who said that he wanted to be able to get into fishing, and Carlos said, "You know, this guy is never going to get into fishing. I'm going to squash him like a bug." Quintessential Carlos. "I'll squash him like a bug."
He would get up at the mic and say, "I don't give a damn about you small fishermen. I'm going to get it all." I mean, it was not a veiled state of mind.
And then in 2010, a new set of rules is put in place for groundfish that gives him the edge he is looking for. For many, the days at sea regulation is gone. Now, government scientists will determine how many fish of each species can be caught in a year. And each fisherman will be given a percentage of that number, a quota for how many they can catch of each kind of fish.
And then the boat can pick and choose when it goes out, how many days it goes out to catch its allotment for the year.
It's made to order for Carlos Rafael because the percentage a fisherman gets of a species like cod, for example, is based on how many cod a fisherman caught in recent years.
So the people who fished the hardest on the most stressed fish were given the biggest percentage of the future quota on that fish.
And so Rafael is able to obtain around 50 permits to catch millions of pounds of fish.
These quotas, these permits, were the lifeblood of commercial fishing after 2010. If you had a lot of permits, you could do a lot of fishing, you could make a lot of money. If you didn't have a lot of permits, then you couldn't do a lot of fishing and make a lot of money.
It sounds simple, but it is not when it comes to groundfish. And that is because groundfish swim together. And when the nets go down, different species get caught together.
So whatever fish is the lowest quota, once you caught your quota of that fish, you had to stop fishing. So if you caught all the yellowtail you were allowed to catch, you couldn't cast your nets anymore because you were going to pull in more yellowtail among everything else that you caught. And so you had to stop right there.
And inevitably, some fishermen do not have enough permits to stay in business. And once again, Carlos Rafael is there to buy their boats and their permits, ostensibly bailing them out, but also serving his personal ambition.
"So this is a matter of time for me to pick the rest of this and just get them all out of the picture. Because I don't know if it's freedom, if it's ambition, this is from the heart. I always had the ambition to get control of all things."
This may be Rafael's moment to get total control. But that does not mean he will stop also trying to steal. In October 2013, one of his boats reports a catch of 1,850 pounds of scallops. But a check by NOAA of what is really on board reveals that the boat has 12,794 pounds, over six times what he reports. He gets caught again, and NOAA fines him $70,000. Rafael can afford that fine. And so he is willing to take risks that other fishermen would not dare take.
"I'd be scared to death. He had a lot of permits, so maybe he could afford to lose one or two. I got one. If I lose that, a boat without permits, not totally worthless, but not worth much."
They're trying to follow the rules. They're trying to eke out a living with maybe three boats. Here you have Carlos Rafael with 40 boats. He's cheating. You know he's cheating. And he's prospering. You're not cheating. And you're not prospering.
And there seems to be just one conclusion.
He's untouchable. He's the Codfather.
For years, Carlos Rafael is a thorn in the side of law enforcement. He has been prosecuted 3 times with 2 convictions, and he has paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines for civil violations.
You can cite him for doing this and that, and for him, it's like a parking ticket. Something more was needed.
And the chance to do something more comes in January 2015, when IRS agents see an article in the New Bedford paper saying that Rafael wants to sell his business. He tells the reporter, I'm going to cash in and screw.
So I saw that article and thought, if he wants to sell his business, maybe we're interested in buying it.
And so IRS undercover agents place a call to Rafael.
They just picked up the phone and called him and said, we're a bunch of guys from New York. We're thinking about buying your business. Would you sit down with us?
Rafael takes the bait and agrees to a meeting in June. There are 3 undercover agents working the operation. One is playing the part of a financial broker. The other 2 are his clients, who claim to be Russian investors. They meet Rafael at his office.
He wasn't anybody like I ever met before.
Alex is an undercover agent for the IRS.
If he's given an opportunity, he'll talk about himself constantly.
Larger than life, very in your face.
Gary is an undercover agent for the IRS.
Lots of vulgarity, swearing, yelling, screaming. I didn't realize that the F word could be used in so many ways in a sentence, to be quite frank.
The Russian's first question to Rafael, what does he want for his business? His answer, $175 million.
And they said to him, well, we'd have to see your books. So when Carlos showed them his legitimate books, it did not support that price. So they said to him, why would we pay you $175 million for this business?
And to answer that question, he needs to reveal his scheme, how he gets around the law and keeps his profits high.
Got some of the species where we got locomotive and make the species disappear. I call them something else. You know, some of the quarters, I got plenty of it. I call them
So that is his secret. It's called lying. This is what he does. If a captain catches 3,000 pounds of cod, which is a fish for which Rafael has a low allotment, he calls the cod something else, like haddock, a fish for which he has a huge allotment.
This year, I'll have 15 million pounds of haddock, so I can call any son of a bitch haddock.
It's just a simple matter of falsifying official reports that are sent to NOAA. Rafael tells the boat captains how to lie about what they catch. He lies about what he buys.
So back at NOAA, when they compare the two, they don't detect any fraud because they match.
And so Rafael can catch whatever he wants and not be limited by his quota, what the government allows him to catch. When law-abiding fishermen reach the end of their allowable share of the catch, they are forced to stop fishing. Or they have the option to buy more quota.
They gave me, I think, 6,000 pounds of winter flounder for the whole year, which starts May 1st. So I've already used that up. So in order to stay in business, I have to lease the rights to catch more flounder from another fisherman.
Honest fishermen like Rodman Sykes are forced to pay for the right to catch more fish. Because he is lying to the government, Carlos Rafael does not have that expense.
That's why 90% of them are not making it, because I'm in the bayonet. I can call them whatever the I want in the bayonet. So I didn't have to go out and buy quotas.
And Rafael claims his captains profit from the scheme as well, because he requires them to chip in on any quota that he is forced to buy.
The captain knows, and the captain is the one that loves to do that.
because he doesn't want to go buy that quota. So every time I do the charade, they're making money.
And later, when the scheme is discovered, some people on the waterfront understand a captain's choice.
I can tell you one thing. If you're a captain of a fairly good vessel that's making fairly good money at a time where some of your compatriots are starving to death or going out of business or losing their homes, you'll pretty much do what the hell you're told. And I don't want people to think that, you know, that I approved of it, but I think I understand it.
By January 2016, the IRS agents know they need to get more proof of Raphael's scheme. And at their last meeting, he provides it all.
He pulled out trip reports, he pulled out bills of lading and dealer reports, all the documents that identify what was being caught, which boat was landing it, and to whom it was being sold.
It's as if he is showing off a great achievement. He is proud of his scheme.
I've seen it all, and I've done it all. That's the other thing. I've done it all. I wrote the book.
Anyone seeing Carlos Raphael on the New Bedford waterfront would not suspect that the man is worth millions of dollars. He drives an old pickup truck. His house is a modest home in nearby Dartmouth that he bought in 1980. And while he typically keeps the details of his finances close to his chest, in 2016, he is forced to open his books to two Russians who say they want to buy his business. Alex is an undercover agent for the IRS.
I was sitting behind a desk and, he reaches out in his drawer and pulls out a piece of paper with the cash payments.
This would have been another $600,000 in my bottom line.
Okay.
It is a receipt of sorts for $600,000. Money that he says he receives from a wholesale fish dealer in New York City. The dealer is not in on Raphael's fraud. He simply buys his fish from Raphael at a discount because he pays with cash, hand-delivered to Raphael.
He would meet Carlos halfway between New York and Boston and give him a duffel bag with cash in it for the fish.
The bags of cash were so heavy that sometimes they would struggle to actually carry them.
And the bags of cash are deliberately kept out of sight.
So for Carlos, those cash payments never made it on his books. So that became unreported income.
And that's something of interest to the IRS agents he is talking to. They ask, what happens to the cash?
Carlos said, I got it overseas. Wait. If you have it overseas, you have to fill out paperwork and stuff, right? There's currency reports that you fill out at an airport anytime you take more than $10,000. What do you mean you're bringing it out of the country?
Raphael says he has a friend with special credentials.
I call him, I say, hey, I'm flying out tonight, I'm not working tonight, you better get your ass to you because I got like $60,000 on my ass, I ain't going through the day. So he goes, hey, I give him the envelope, it's in his pockets. He doesn't go through security because he got one of his badges. He's an agent. No,
that agent he is talking about is a local law enforcement officer breaking the law and getting cash past security at Boston's Logan Airport.
It was a very big moment for us. You have to understand, that's where 9/11 started. And now we're hearing about a law enforcement officer circumventing controls and security at that same airport. So we right away were very alarmed, very worried.
The officer is Bristol County Sheriff's Deputy Antonio Freitas. Rafael says Freitas owes him.
I got him the job. I got him his raises. So what the f- you'll do with the f- I got him to do.
Shortly after Rafael makes that claim, Freitas is caught smuggling cash for his friend, Carlos Rafael.
So Freitas was ultimately indicted for conspiracy and bulk cash smuggling. So he was tried and convicted.
He is sentenced to a year in prison. The IRS undercover operation ends in January 2016. The government feels it has what it needs to move forward. As the agents say goodbye to Raphael, he thinks he has sold his business to a couple of Russian mobsters. After all, he is untouchable.
He would brag to us over and over again how no one was ever going to catch him and how everyone had been trying to catch him for years and years and years. And, you know, he knew that he was tricking everybody. And meanwhile, at that time, he was the one getting tricked.
For years, Carlos Rafael runs a criminal operation believing he will never be caught. He confidently tells the undercover agents,
I've run circles of this ass. Everywhere else, when kids are, yeah. Everybody went bust.
Yeah.
And we are flying, we keep buying books, we keep buying fish. They could never figure out how we did it.
But on February 26, 2016, more than a dozen federal law enforcement officers surround Carlos Seafood and move inside to arrest Rafael.
Carlos Rafael was quoted in the press as saying, I'm a pirate, it's your job to catch me. I love that, because that's perfect. We caught him.
After the raid on Rafael's business with hundreds of his records seized, federal investigators begin the work of sorting out his lies.
Fish by fish, boat by boat, sail by sail, thousands of transactions.
In the end, the government comes up with a figure. In 4 years, Rafael illegally caught at least 782,000 pounds of fish.
My first question was, is that a lot of fish? So we asked an analyst at NOAA, and the analyst said, if forests were your thing, this would be like burning down Vermont. We said, okay, it's a lot of fish.
And it's important to remember whose fish those are.
You know, this is really a crime against all of us, because these fish didn't belong to Carlos. He didn't spend a dime raising them. He didn't feed them. He just went out and took them. And he took them illegally, and he took them not just from his fellow fishermen, he took them from us.
In March 2017, faced with 15 hours of undercover recordings made by the IRS agents, Rafael pleads guilty to conspiracy, falsifying federal records, bulk cash smuggling, and tax evasion. Through his attorney, he declines American Greed's request to participate in this report. At his sentencing hearing, Rafael argues that in perpetrating his scheme, he was actually trying to help fishermen in New Bedford. He wanted to keep them working. He asks for 24 months of community confinement, claiming that his crime was stupid, not greedy. The judge disagrees, saying this was not stupid, this was corrupt. He sentences Rafael to 46 months in prison.
I think he was convinced to give Carlos Rafael a high sentence by the sheer extent of the misconduct in this case. And the fact that he had been prosecuted 3 times in the past for crimes related to his fishing business. So I think we were able to convince the court that unless federal law enforcement was going to be a complete joke, it had to be the last time.
Rafael is in federal prison, but there is a worry on New England waterfronts that his crimes have hurt the reputation of all fishermen here who essentially operate in an honor system.
Carlos didn't care about the honor system. In fact, he used it to his advantage and really, in the process, dishonored every other law-abiding fisherman out on the water.
And those law-abiding fishermen believe that is unfair. They have a message for anyone who hears the story of Carlos Rafael.
I want them to know that the vast majority of fishermen in this port, New Bedford, all up and down the East Coast, are honest, hardworking guys, very hardworking guys.
And while some want to blame the system itself for Rafael's crimes, others are clear. There is just one person to blame, Carlos Rafael.
He's the person who broke the law. That's where the blame needs to be, with this person who's not a fisherman, he's a crook.
Thanks for listening to the American Greed Podcast, presented by CNBC. I'm Stacy Keach.
got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Subscribe to Squawk Pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.